Hello and welcome to another episode of WELV Talk. This is your host, Alan, and joining me today we have two very special guests. We have Mike Iapochi and Jackie Arsenic, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
I can call you Mike and Jackie, even though on your official paperwork you're right. It's Michael and Jacqueline, so Jacqueline. To give you your proper names.
If I misbehave, call me Jacqueline.
Go ahead and introduce your titles and where you guys are from.
Sure. I'm the Commissioner for Ulster County Department of Social Services.
And I'm the Safe Harbor Coordinator for Ulster County Department of Social Services.
All right, and we're here today to really focus on some pretty important issues, especially because January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month, and so there's a big drive to get some awareness out about what that means and why it's a big issue even for locally, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're really grateful for the invitation to be here and to talk about the Safe Harbor Program.
Yeah, so that's a great place to start. So what is the Safe Harbor Program? Tell us about it.
The Safe Harbor Program is from the Office of Children and Family Services of New York State, and it focuses on addressing child sex and labor trafficking. It's been an initiative that started at the state level, and we joined as a Safe Harbor County in 2015. It's a five-year-long initiative, and we're beginning our fourth year of the program. And it's basically designed to raise awareness in the community about child sex and labor trafficking. We're also educating service providers and other professionals about trafficking activity. We are conducting outreach, and we provide prevention education to youth. We have an outreach and prevention educator who's also part of our Safe Harbor team. Mm-hmm. For cases that we identify, we provide case management for the youth who we identify as having been trafficked or at risk of being trafficked. And we're also gathering data that's going to be extremely useful going forward to give us a sense of how much activity of this nature is happening and to also help the state get a sense of how much trafficking is happening across the state. Because the main issue is that it is happening here in counties like Ulster County and in communities, you know, like Ellenville and all the other communities across our county. So it's really an issue that we're very committed to being involved in. It comes under the umbrella of child safety and well-being, and that's why it's a Department of Social Services initiative.
Right.
Because it really, at the end of the day, it's about child abuse.
Right. And that's alarming to hear that it takes place in our community, our communities, you know, local communities.
Right.
When I think of human trafficking, you think of foreign markets or the city, you know, but you don't think of your back.
Right, in your backyard.
Backyard.
And I think a lot of people are, very, they're alarmed, I think, mainly, too, because they don't really understand the different types of trafficking that can happen.
Mm.
So they have these very narrow depictions of, you know, the movie Taken. That's where they get their education from, the media that sensationalizes these situations where there's force, so there's kidnapping and there's movement across borders, which definitely does happen. But those are the minority of situations, especially when we're talking about youth.
Mm. What led 2015, what led, why that time, what led to this program being implemented around that time?
I think what happened at the federal level, there was legislation that mandated that states across the country begin to do screening of all of the children that would come into our care and custody. So there was an initial screening tool that was developed, and it became embedded in how we assess and investigate cases so that all the children coming into the child welfare system were screened, and they're at a higher susceptibility and a higher vulnerability. And then New York State, in connection with the efforts that were being made at the federal level, developed a Safe Harbor program, and it surrounds the Safe Harbor law, which we'd also like to share a little bit of information about.
My next question was going to be that. And so there's this Safe Harbor program, which takes its name from the Safe Harbor law. And go ahead and explain what that is.
So the Safe Harbor for Exploited Youth Act of 2008, the main objective is to divert youth who have been involved in commercial sexual exploitation to comprehensive services as opposed to the juvenile delinquency and criminal justice systems. So essentially to decriminalize prostitution for youth. There's no such thing as a teen prostitute. Youth cannot legally consent to sex until they're 17. But more importantly, you know, their brains aren't even fully developed until they're in their late 20s. So they cannot make informed decisions. And these are usually the youth with the least amount of choices that you find in these situations. As one researcher has said, that these are youth who are finding sexual solutions to non-sexual problems. And we also do deal with, we work with youth who have been victims of, survivors of labor. labor trafficking as well. So that's the main objective of the Safe Harbor Act.
How does Safe Harbor define a sexually exploited child?
So it defines a sexually exploited child as any person under the age of 18 years of age who's been subject to sexual exploitation as a result of their loitering for the purpose of prostitution or their engagement to exchange a sexual conduct in return for something of value. And that could be food, clothing, shelter, a place to stay, promises of, you know, romantic relationship, protection from another person. So anytime a youth exchanges something of value, sex act for something of value, that's usually considered survival sex. Some would consider it rape. So that's one form of trafficking. And then there are other, you know, in that situation, there's the buyer and then there's the youth. In other situations, there may be the trafficker, the buyer, and the youth. So then you have different forms of trafficking. So you have family type, if a family may be trafficking their youth, and we are seeing a lot more of this because of the opiate epidemic. But also the family can be trafficked as a unit as well. So we need to be on the lookout for that. There's gang involvement. So if a gang may be trafficking the youth, as we mentioned, survival sex. And then if a pimp or trafficker, so some stranger that they've maybe met online, for example.
So you guys must work closely with law enforcement when you encounter these situations and you discover sometimes, I imagine, some alarming facts and details, then that's when law enforcement sometimes I imagine has to get involved.
Some situations,
yeah. Yeah, and law enforcement is one of the service providers and professional groups that we've really focused on scheduling trainings. We've done a lot of training with law enforcement over the past couple of years, and we're also involved in training our service providers. We really want to make sure that they're equipped with the information to at least do initial screenings and look for some of the red flags that are out there. I think another feature of the Safe Harbor program from the Office of Children and Family Services is that the fact that it's a 5-year long initiative speaks to and reflects about that it is really complicated subject matter, and it's something that really requires a lot of effort to change the perspectives in the community and among service providers about this activity. You know, that we're not talking about reckless and promiscuous and troublesome youth. We're really trying to bring across the message that these are youth that need our support and need our understanding because they're facing desperate circumstances, and quite frequently they don't even realize that they're being exploited because of their vulnerabilities and the fact that they're just trying to survive what could be an underlying, you know, difficult circumstance.
And they're used, you know, they come from histories of abuse and neglect, and it's sort of what they're used to. They don't know any other way. So even if someone is exploiting them and treating them in a bad way, they're also, you know, the traffickers, you know, they tend to lure youth with these promises of romantic relationships. They shower them with gifts. And so those are the things that they see and that they've never had before. So regardless of the abuse, you know, these are things that they need and they want, and you know, that's one of the reasons why they stay in those relationships and don't see it as exploitive.
Is the 5-year plan goal, I imagine, is part of it because after 5 years, essentially in 2019, it'll be, right, I think, is the goal to not only obviously decrease and identify some issues, but also to really get a scale of, or get a sense of what the problem is and how big the problem is? Is that the kind of 5-year
Certainly,
goal?
Yes. I mean, collecting data from all of the counties that are participating and from getting all of the counties across the state to become safe harbor counties and to get a clear sense of what the volume of activity is. But even with the effort that's being expended in connection with that and the fact that, you know, we're mandated to screen all of the children that we come into contact with or engage, it's really something that is incredibly under the radar. That's why educating and training our service providers, law enforcement, healthcare officials, school officials, any organization that's in contact with children and devoted to taking care of and keeping children safe on a regular basis need to be aware of this.
Right.
And, you know, in connection with all of the organizations and professionals that are mandated reporters, it's important that they also be aware of this particular activity, because another thing that we're seeing is that usually there's some other underlying incident or trauma that has taken place, which is something that maybe brought that child to the attention of some individual or some organization. And that's why we're really emphasizing the education part, because prevention is also something. Awareness can lead to prevention because it can lead to identifying that that might be taking place.
And there's a lot of intersectionality, as he said. So the intersectionality between, say, you know, suicide or substance abuse, domestic violence, sexual assault, there's so much intersectionality there. So, you know, it's really important that we be aware of the red flags, which I know we'll talk about a little bit later.
So what are the term commercial sexual exploitation? And there's different forms of what that can mean, right?
Right. So the different forms of commercial sexual exploitation are child pornography. And then there's child sex tourism, where someone travels to another destination with the explicit intent of exploiting that youth. And so child pornography and sex tourism are worldwide industries, and they're very profitable industries thanks to the internet, which creates, you know, has really expanded choices available to buyers and have created like nearly undetectable transactions and instantaneous transactions. There's intrafamilial child exploitation, and then there's domestic minor sex trafficking. There's also stripping as well. So those are the different forms.
I mean, so the next question, what does trafficking look like exactly? And you know, I have, you know, many questions to how you guys, it's hard for someone on the outside. I mean, you guys are obviously in this industry, you are social workers or involved in family services. But for someone like myself who's on the outside, it seems it's hard to comprehend that this stuff can be happening, and that you guys obviously are aware of it, but you can't stop it because, you know what I mean? Like, you're aware that these things, really bad things are happening, not just locally, but worldwide. And yet you would just think, well, then let's stop it right away. Like, that's happening. Put a stop to it. But obviously it's not that easy, and it's not that easy to detect, is what you're saying, right?
It can be hard to detect, especially when, you know, it's very rare that a youth is going to come to you and say, I'm being trafficked, can you please help me, you know? But oftentimes there's a connection between childhood trauma and crime. So youth who've experienced trauma are 59% more likely to commit a crime. Wow. And then 29% more likely to commit a crime as an adult. So there's you know, they may not be coming to you and saying, I need help, but you know, when they're coming in as pins, as a person in need of supervision, for example, or they're misbehaving and they're acting out in school, you know, that those are, I think, are their cries for help. You know, there's a reason why they're misbehaving and they're acting out, or they're so angry. And so I think we need to take that into consideration. You know, there's so many different types of trafficking situations. So as I mentioned before, it could be just a survival sex situation where maybe a youth was being abused in the home and they run away to get away from the abuse, and now they're engaging in exchanging commercial sex act for a place to stay or someone to sleep on someone's couch. It could be a youth who, you know, the youth, we'll talk more about this later, but, you know, youth on Facebook, for example, they have maybe 3,000 friends. Their Facebook pages are public. They don't know who all of those people are. They don't know who they are. And they're airing their life out for everyone to see. So maybe they're saying something like, you know, I'm in this foster care. I can't stand my foster parents. They won't let me go to these parties. I'm having such a hard time. The traffickers are looking for those vulnerabilities, and they're looking to connect with these youth online. And they connect with them by saying, oh, I've been through the same situation. I know exactly how you feel. Why don't you come to this party? I'll come and pick you up. Or maybe, you know, they develop this relationship before they even meet, and the trafficker asks them to send them a sexual photo. Some, you know, there's a lot of sexting going on, especially among youth in schools, and that's another thing that we could talk about.
Is it sex trafficking? Sorry to interrupt. If that happens, say someone like a sexual predator online request something like that, and they send it, does that make it sexual at that stage? Is it considered trafficking?
It has to be a commercial exchange in order for it to be trafficking. Okay. So if they take that photo and they and they sell it, or they take that photo and they say, look, now I've got this photo, and if you don't do this for me, if you don't, you know, sleep with this person, I guess maybe, and that person profits from it, then I'm going to show that photo to your parents, or I'm going to spread it around the school. So that's coercion. So the fraud was promises of a romantic relationship, but then the coercion was, I've got this photo, and this is how I'm going to keep you in that situation. So, you know, there always has to be, people do sometimes get confused between child abuse and sex trafficking. So there has to be a commercial exchange of some sort.
And then at that point, you know, the youth might arrive at being convinced that they're still in a romantic relationship or an emotional relationship or an underlying attachment has formed. So they begin to consider the possibility that they'll continue to do these acts that they're being requested to do. Mm-hmm. So the coercion and the fraud has taken place and they're actively involved in it. And in the context of many of the youth that come into the child welfare system, again, there might have been some sort of underlying abuse or neglect, and now they have come into our care and custody, and they're placed in foster care. They might be in a residential facility. And then the susceptibility to being lured by the traffickers to behave a certain way because potentially maybe all of their needs aren't being met. And some of the real guiding principles behind the Safe Harbor program in terms of screening and assessment are to really try to engage the youth where they're at. Mm. Instead of being judgmental or dictating to them about how they can behave, trying to really get to know them, what their concerns are, what their needs are, what their interests are, and trying to get to the heart of why they might be vulnerable and susceptible. And if they're going to be behaving in a certain way, come up with practical solutions and strategies to make sure that we're forging a trustful relationship with them and that they're going to continue to look at us as a resource. And this is changing, you know, across the spectrum. I mean, many times in the past, we would engage youth in connection with being able to arrive at diagnosing what a circumstance is and then basically dictating treatment. Mm-hmm. But if those services that we arrive at thinking might help a situation, or the youth's not receptive to that, then we're really not going to arrive at a successful outcome. So I think, you know, the introduction of the dynamics around why trafficking to youth happens, you know, is helpful across the board in connection with improving the engagement that we're having and integrating.
Sometimes you need to take a harm reduction. You know, if a youth is not ready to leave the situation, well, let's take a harm reduction approach where, you know, let's, how can we keep you as safe as possible until we can get them to a point where they're ready to leave that situation? Mm-hmm. I think it's also important to just mention that, you know, when we think of traffickers, we think of just a typical older male, but they can be any gender, they could be any race, any occupation. And we're seeing that they're becoming a lot younger. So we're seeing 18, 19 year olds who are becoming traffickers, and oftentimes they've been trafficked themselves, right, or they're being groomed to be traffickers because, you know, they're living in poverty and what other way can they afford to make a living. But so that's important to mention. Yeah. And also just also important to mention that there are different routes and reasons that youth enter into the sex trade. So sometimes it's, like I said before, with the survival sex situation, it's not always a trafficker. These are youth often with histories of abuse and neglect. So they may be doing this to fulfill emotional needs. They may be doing it to seek gender and sexual identity validation. So we've had youth tell us that, look, you know, this is the first time someone actually is attracted to me and is willing to pay money to be with me. And that is so validating, right, for me. That's hard for us to hear. Yeah, you know, it's hard.
Right, but the youth may see like two positives there. On the one, they're being recognized, and then on the second hand, they're going to get a financial gain. Yeah. Out of it, so they think win-win in their mind. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
When you guys come across that, you're like,
so their self-esteem and their self-image, mm-hmm, they're, right, getting validation.
It must be hard in those cases to sometimes get those people to see the negatives of both of those, mm-hmm, things, right?
It is difficult. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of patience and a lot of time to develop rapport with these youth. Some of them just meeting basic needs. They may be doing this to help the family make ends meet. The family might not even know about it. Mm. You know, so it's not just homeless youth. It could be youth who are housed and then they're trying to make ends meet. So it's important to take that into consideration.
Right. Yep. So I think we've gone over a little bit about what trafficking looks like and different types and a little bit on why youth are vulnerable. But are there certain youth that are at a higher risk?
Yes, there are definitely youth that are at higher risk. So we're looking at youth with histories of physical and sexual abuse, youth who don't understand, you know, they've had their bodies taken from them from such a very young age, they don't understand boundaries. LGBTQ youth are a very high-risk population with unique needs. They comprise 40% of the homeless population. 26% are kicked out of their homes when they come out to their parents. 1 in 2 face a negative reaction when they come out. So they're very, you know, I think this issue is oftentimes phrased as a female issue. This happens to young girls and women, mm-hmm. and that is not the case. There was a study out of New York City called Surviving the Streets. They surveyed 1,000 youth, and they found that heterosexual boys were 3 times more likely to trade sex for a place to stay than heterosexual females, and LGBTQ youth were 7 times more likely to trade sex for a place to stay than heterosexual youth. So also, youth with a history of living in foster care, 85% more likely to be trafficked. And youth in the juvenile delinquency system, as we mentioned before, the link between trauma and crime. Also, youth who are crossing the border without a guardian, a parent or guardian. So they're susceptible to labor or sex trafficking. Youth with intellectual developmental disabilities. Leaving anything out?
No, and I think they know the common theme with all of these populations of youth is that there was some underlying, again, you know, form of sexual or physical abuse or neglect or abandonment, where having some type of a primary supportive emotional relationship was not something that they had an experience with. And that can really shape that youth going forward. So I think it's a basic human need that every individual seeks that. And if it's not something that's arrived at, you know, during childhood or earlier developmental times, that's why, you know, these predatory traffickers, and they are, they're extremely predatory, they're manipulative, they can operate online now, and, you know, the susceptibility and the vulnerability of some of these populations of youth is so great, and that's why we have to really, as uncomfortable as the subject matter might be, and as difficult as it might be to hear about it, it's so vitally important, and it's essential, particularly among service providers, again, healthcare professionals, law enforcement, social workers, and, you know, we feel like we've made great strides in Ulster County over the past 3 years with the training and the awareness. And, you know, the child welfare system is taking this on, and it is recognizing that children that come into the child welfare system are specifically and dramatically susceptible.
Right, also, when a huge at-risk population, runaway, homeless, impoverished, throwaway youth. Throwaway youth is a term used for youth who run away and are never reported as missing. And, you know, homelessness is a major driving force behind survival sex. It's kind of a no-brainer. Mm. And it's just, again, important to take into consideration the systemic and the social, you know, push factors that push youth into trafficking.
You mentioned labor trafficking. Mm-hmm. So what is that? How is it different from sexual trafficking?
Right. So I think it's, yeah. So there are 3 types of trafficking. There's minors under the age of 18 involved in commercial sex. There are those age 18 and older involved in commercial sex via force, fraud, or coercion. So we know that if there's no force, fraud, or coercion for adults, it's considered prostitution. And unfortunately, it's criminal here in this country. And then there's children and adults who are forced to perform labor and or services in conditions of involuntary servitude, peonage, debt bondage, slavery, via force, fraud, or coercion. So, you know, the Department of Labor allows for youth to work in a variety of different situations, depending on how old they are, what's the occupation, is school in session, how many hours are they working. But when we talk about labor trafficking, we're talking about youth who are involved in these situations where they're being subject to involuntary servitude. Debt bondage is a situation where, you know, someone smuggled into this country and, but then they say, look, you know, you've accrued all this debt along the way and you can't leave until you pay this debt or I'm going to call immigration. Mm-hmm. And then the debt just keeps accruing and they can never get out of it. So now they're in this debt bondage situation. Mm-hmm. And human smuggling is a crime against a border. People sometimes confuse that with trafficking. Human trafficking is a crime against an individual, and they can happen simultaneously.
I think it's important to also mention that while our Safe Harbor program is focused solely on youth, the Department of Social Services has supported and is receptive to getting referrals for adults who might be subjected to the same activity. We have partnerships with other service providers, particularly Workers' Justice Center has been one of our partners that has made made referrals to the department on adults who have been being trafficked and under the circumstances that we were talking about previously have been lured into New York State and into Ulster County on the promises of certain kinds of employment, only to find out subsequently that they had been defrauded and that the circumstances that they arrive at are not going to provide them with what their expectations were. So our long-range goals and what we're actually doing right now is building a sustainable response to human trafficking, whether it be among children or adults. And our hope is that, you know, we can transition these individuals into being able to have their basic needs met and then have their circumstances addressed so that they're not vulnerable to having to stay where they are.
What kind of services do you provide to survivors of, I guess, labor trafficking, but also sexual trafficking as well?
Well, what we aim to do, there's in New York State something called a confirmation process. And depending upon what the circumstances are around an individual, whether it be a child or adult, they can be confirmed as a person that has been trafficked. And that confirmation can assist them in becoming eligible for a series of benefits and services. As far as children go, there are circumstances that we will provide, you know, all of their basic needs. It has to be arrived at with some degree of receptivity, depending upon how we've engaged them and what their circumstances are. And adults, you know, the same type of approach has to be taken. There has to be receptivity. But basic needs will include shelter, medical needs, nutrition, and then underlying problems that they might have been experiencing. Sometimes an individual wants to return from the place where they came from. Sometimes an individual needs to be sheltered in a place where they know that they can be safe because they might be vulnerable to the trafficker continuing to pursue him or her.
And our case manager, she works with youth oftentimes just to educate them on healthy relationships, because there's a lot of overlap between domestic violence and trafficking and some of the tactics that these traffickers use to manipulate and control them. So healthy relationships, how to stay safe online. You know, she works with on body image issues. And so, you know, developing self-esteem and trying to, you know, get at what their passions are and vocational skills so that they have other opportunities to make a living.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, the theme behind it is engaging youth, you know, where they are at and what their circumstances are, in a way where we're not being judgmental. We're trying to be understanding about why they're in the circumstance they're in and what their outlook is on what direction do they want to go in. I mean, one of the things that we see across the board with respect to individuals that have survived these experiences and have been able to move forward is there's the same desire to be leading a fulfilling and satisfying life where you're able to pursue your interests. And I mean, this activity has so much stigma attached to it. And I think particularly with youth, there's the reaction to potentially perceive them to be being reckless and promiscuous and troublesome and electing to behave this way. That's part of overcoming that perspective and part of changing, you know, the attitude and the response. And it also connects to the decriminalization of this activity.
Choices don't happen in a vacuum. You know?
What are some of the red flags associated with trafficking?
So there are a lot of red flags. I don't know how much time we have, but they could always go to our website, Ulster County. If you Google Ulster County Safe Harbor, our website will come up. We don't have a specific link because it's embedded in the DSS website and it'd be way too long. But some of the general red flags, youth under the age of 18 involved in commercial sex, boom, they are a victim, survivor of sex trafficking. They may be using street slang for sex work, so being in the game, for example, is a term that they use for being involved in the sex trades. Wanting to square up means wanting to get out. Also, there are finesse and guerrilla pimps. So finesse pimps tends to use psychological manipulation to control their victims as opposed to a guerrilla pimp who uses extreme force. Finesse pimps may use force as well, but they tend to you know, bring the youth through that romantic honeymoon phase where they shower them with gifts and, you know, all kinds of niceties. And then they convince them to, you know, perform these sex acts. asks for money. They may have a significantly older partner that they spend a lot of time with, a controlling person who doesn't really allow them to speak for themselves. I know in Dutchess County they had done some trainings in tattoo parlors, and one of the artists remembered that a young woman had come in with an older male and had his name was tattooed across her chest, and she did not say one word the entire time he answered all of the questions for her. So they may be reluctant to discuss how they make money, where they live, how or why they came to the United States. That's an indicator often of labor trafficking. The youth may be working more than they're in school. They may be falling asleep in the back of the class. They may be coming to school just to eat. They may be they may stop going to their sports practices or not showing up to a church anymore or any kind of social events. They may be withdrawing from that, and that's something that you'll see that not happen gradually. It'll happen immediately. You'll see an immediate change. And then also inexplicable appearance of excessive cash or expensive items. So this youth has a brand new iPhone, iPad, I don't know, new sneakers. Their hair and nails are done all the time. They don't have a job, or they have a job where they're making a minimum wage. Their parents don't have a ton of money. They're not buying them the things. Well, how are they getting them? That's definitely something that's a red flag. And then there are, unexplained injuries. There are so many red flags to look out for, but those are the general ones. And as I said, you can go to our website and learn a little bit more about the other red flags.
Yeah. What is the website again?
If you just Google Ulster County Safe Harbor, and it will come up.
Okay. And then is there any other programs or services that Safe Harbor offers besides case management?
Well, as Mike had mentioned, we raise awareness. One of my main goals is to raise awareness in the community that trafficking does happen here, but to educate the community about everything we talked about here. Mm-hmm. What do safe harbor laws say? Who are the high risk populations? What are the red flags? How do you engage youth in conversations about trafficking? And gathering data. And our prevention, we think it's really important that we not just react. It's really more important that we prevent this from happening in the first place, and you have to do that with education, educating youth, empowering youth, and educating the community.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that since the program's inception, you have identified cases in this county.
There was recently a high-profile case that was in the news with two of our youth in our care and custody.
People do if they says having talked about this, and once they start to understand the problem, what should someone do if they do suspect a youth is being trafficked?
They can contact a variety of different organizations that partner with us. There's the Crime Victims Assistance Program, which is Ulster County, and that telephone number is 845-340-3443. Family of Woodstock is also one of our partners, and they can be contacted at 845-338-2370, or you can text Family of Woodstock. A lot of people are more comfortable using texting. The text is 845-679-2485. Mm-hmm. We also are listed with the National Human Trafficking Resource Hotline, and that's 888-373-7888. So all of those are numbers that are available 24/7 that there could be outreach to. And then, of course, you could contact Jackie at Ulster County Department of Social Services Safe Harbor Program, which is 845-340-3927. Another potential resource would be the State Central Registry Child Abuse Hotline. They're trained and equipped to be able to field telephone calls of this nature. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people might be more comfortable contacting the State Central Registry. It comes under the umbrella of child abuse. Mm-hmm. We're also really fortunate that many of our neighboring counties are also involved in the Safe Harbor program, so we have a very strong region in terms of the outreach that's going on, the awareness, the education of professionals, and again, everything that we can do around prevention and just reaching out to other organizations that are engaging youth on a regular basis. Being here in Ellenville and being able to have a relationship with the high school and the law enforcement out here is just critical. It's essential that we're having these conversations.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in today and this month being January. January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. Thanks for coming in and raising some awareness for me and for our listeners, because it's really it's a very important topic, mm-hmm. and I'm really thankful that you came in to share some information.
We're thankful
today.
That you could have us. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Alan. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. So this was Michael Iapoche, the Commissioner of Ulster County Department of Social Services.
Iapoche.
And Jacqueline Arsenick, Safe Harbor Coordinator for Ulster County Department of Social Services. Again, thanks so much. If they want to contact either one of you, mentioned the phone number for Jackie, for example, was
340-3927.
And if you want information about what we've discussed today or those numbers again, the websites again, feel free to contact Jackie.
And you can also just contact the Department of Social Services at 334-5000 or 334-5221.
All right. Yeah. All right, thank you so much, guys.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.